ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Tuesday. Corbin Middlemass alongside the Footscray heartthrob Bob Murphy on what is a substantial news week in the world of footy. Bob, first of all, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Corbin. Nice to be in your company, albeit with some unpleasant headlines doing the rounds.
Yeah, these are serious allegations, and it's an interesting one for us to try and tackle. And I saw the footy shows obviously last night in the way that they handled them, all a little differently. Channel 7 did 25 minutes or so of it off the top. A lot of the other networks decided to keep it to a minimum. So here's what we knew coming into the day, that Victoria Police are investigating the report of a sexual assault in East Melbourne on the 17th of August. Now, the incident occurred at a hotel at Wellington Parade in the early hours of the morning, and that the exact circumstances are yet to be established, and the investigation into the incident remains ongoing. Now, the ABC today have followed some other media outlets by naming four players involved in this. Those four players are Chad Warner, Isaac Heaney, James Jordan, and Riley Bice. Now, the Sydney Swans released a statement yesterday. The Swans can confirm several players involved in an alleged incident in Melbourne last night. The Swans have notified the AFL and the relevant authorities and cannot provide further comment at this stage. And Matthew Pavlich addressed the media at 2 p.m. The entire press conference went less than 60 seconds. And now, essentially, we're waiting to get a conclusion, or at least the next step in the police investigation. And obviously, the AFL's response will follow after that. That this is what we do every Tuesday, Bob. We react to how the footy show's handled all the key issues, and this is certainly as big a story that has been in the game this year. Here's how AFL 360 tackled it off the top with Jared Waitley last night.
There are four players central to this and potentially a fifth as it is being investigated. The Herald Sun broke the story right on noon with a heavy police presence around the Pullman Hotel as Victoria Police confirmed its investigation a short time later. You've heard the witness accounts describing two women approaching staff at the hotel demanding to be let back into a guest room, complaining about an incident that had taken place during the night. Coach Dean Cox was among club officials who were caught totally unawares when confronted by a woman in the foyer, and some of that exchange was overheard by others present and a photograph taken. Cox was known to be rocked by the confrontation. The AFL Integrity Department, as is standard practice, will run in behind the police investigation, and the police investigation has, amongst other lines of inquiries, gathered the CCTV vision from the hotel today. So what's alleged here is to be tested, but the details of it are mortifying, I think, for player, for club and for code.
What was your response to learning about it, Bob?
Rocked by it. Yeah. Genuinely rocked by it, and still sort of coming to grips with it. And it is an evolving story, and what we know about the situation, there's almost a visceral feeling of being uncomfortable and feeling it in your stomach. Don't want to speak on behalf of other people, but that's how I feel about it. There's still so much to play out, you know, with the details and with any investigation. The fact that, you know, I mean, we're talking on a football podcast, but this is a criminal investigation. And I think one of the things that I'm really mindful of is the sensitivity and the care that we all need to share around the language and in a sincere way. So it is a football podcast, and we're talking about the questioning and the focus on, you know, on a footy club and a small group of players. But the woman or the women involved and their welfare needs to be spoken about and needs to be paramount in this. So it's just something we need to, I feel like we actually just need to be really clear about that, because once we start getting into the other streams of the conversation around where the investigation goes next, and then we get into the ethics and morality around, you know, should the players just simply be stood down until this investigation runs its course? There's a whole lot of threads to that one. And then we get into the football matters of where this leaves the team, finals aspirations, premiership hopes. But if we start just to throw it all into the one mix, that's where certain phrases and language can really be misconstrued for the wrong reasons, to say the least.
I think it's a great call out, and it is. I think because of how serious the allegations are, there's as you said, the majority of us, you know, what we do is essentially talk about footy. We don't talk a lot of crossover issues, and so I think the natural tendency, because the charges are so serious, is to say, well, what does it mean for the on field? And you think, well, I'm not sure that totally feels appropriate either. That sort of rush straight to what does it mean for the Sydney Swans and their chances to win the premiership? You know, playing in a sporting competition about a ball with air in it.
Yeah, and especially, it feels there's something, I think I used the word unsavoury before, but it's something more sinister than that. When the images of, police cars and uniform police casual clothes police taking, bags of evidence, that takes us into a whole different realm here. So as long as we know what stream we're in when we're discussing it, I think we can discuss all the different elements to it, just as long as we acknowledge that the biggest one, the top priority, is around, the criminal investigation itself and those involved who haven't been named and shouldn't be.
Yeah. So just on Matthew Pavlich. So again, this is dealing with what do we know for sure at this particular stage. So we know Matthew Pavlich spoke yesterday. He spoke for less than a minute. He said, "I can confirm that several players were involved in an alleged incident." He went on to say, "We're still piecing together what went on." And then I think here's the interesting line. He said, "It's safe to say we're shocked and disappointed that this has taken place and that the players have found themselves in this position." And then he went on essentially to say, "I'm not going to comment any further." There was a pause. There was a few questions that were asked. And essentially, Pav repeated multiple times, "I'm not going to comment any further. I can't go any further than that." And he turned and walked away. So it almost felt like it was pretty revealing in terms of what he didn't say or how brief that was and the lack of detail, just how serious these allegations are. I thought that gave a bit of an insight as to what we're dealing with here.
Yeah, I think it seems like it's rocked a lot of people in footy, and being the CEO of the Sydney Swans Footy Club and being a relatively inexperienced CEO you can understand that. Matthew would be kind of reeling in a way, and even that, I think the press conference was 41 seconds, and it's been dissected, as is the way with these things, and that is kind of the impetus for my preamble about certain language and just being clear about what you're talking about, because what was the phrase that has been brought into question? It was
found themselves in this situation.
Yeah. So when I hear that, and I can understand people being, that's quite jarring for a lot of people, if we're talking about the welfare of the woman or the women involved or the I think it's what he's referring to there, if I can project onto it, is right down the list of players' professionalism, discipline with alcohol and sleep and the hours they keep. But that's not what's at front of mind for most people. Most people are up the top thinking about the women involved, and then around the responsibility of the leaders of Sydney and the AFL and what happens to these players in the interim of this police investigation.
So that is something else that we know as well, is that the players were out drinking and clearly out for a period of time after a game. So the fact that it was a late start, didn't start until after 4 o'clock on Sunday, meant that Sydney couldn't get back that night. So they decided to stay in Melbourne for the evening. The players had locked up second spot on the table, so their positioning can't move. There is still one game to go, and I understand the Swans are on a 6-day break going into that. Is that unusual to be out?
Oh, that was small fry, but it was also one of those head scratches of, hang on a Sunday night after a game, and you've got one round to go, and a big finals campaign, and you're second on the ladder, and you've got this unenviable grand final record in recent history. Like, I would have expected at the very least for this Sydney Swans outfit to be tucked up in bed early, never mind the what else has transpired, but just that in and of itself I was kind of stunned by.
You mentioned earlier about the no fault stand down policy, which the NRL has an automatic policy in place that essentially that triggers and that the player will miss a period of time. The AFL doesn't have anything that is so transparent or certainly anything that's so public-facing.
Yep.
So we did see a case, obviously, in the not-too-distant past involving Tanner Bruin, where he was stood down for a whole year while there were some serious charges against him. And when the charges were lifted, he was obviously free to return to play. Do you think that's something that would serve the game well and obviously something that comes up at a time like this?
Well, mercifully, we don't have to address it as often as some other codes do. I think it's definitely something worth consideration. So the NRL system is quite rigid, isn't it? It's once the player is charged and the charge is for something that has a certain time frame of, the maximum penalty being quite significant. It's certainly something that I would be okay with. Just sort of mulling it over this morning. I think we're kind of edging closer to that framework anyway, in an informal way. And I would fully expect those Swans players that they wouldn't play this week. It's almost that's the situation almost falls in favour there of the competition, doesn't it? Which I know, again, is not... It's well down the list of priorities and what's important here. But the fact that, Sydney has one game to go and it doesn't affect their position. So it's kind of an easy one, really. I would actually think it's an easy one for the Sydney Swans or the AFL, just to say, at the very least, whilst this is all happening this week, those players who are part of this investigation won't be involved in the game.
Mitch Cleary reported last night too that the Sexual Crime Squad has taken over the investigation from here. We'll obviously wait and hear what happens next in the police investigation, and obviously that'll determine a fair bit as to what happens next from an AFL and from a Sydney Swans point of view on the matter. To a good news story in the footy world, and this is around Josh Fraser, who today will be unveiled as the new coach of the Carlton Football Club. And understandably, this was discussed on all the footy shows last night, including on Footy Classified. Here is Damien Barrett.
The decision by Graham Wright to get him out of the Collingwood Footy Club, where he had been an assistant coach for 3 seasons at the end of last year, it married up, didn't it, when it all was said and done? He at least was in the mix. He's in the right place at the right time. He was not the locked coach, Lordo, when he was made interim coach, but clearly he was a person of interest for Graham Wright for some time. And when Chris Davies, who's the footy operations boss, went public in late July that we as a club want him to be involved, that was the turning point of this conversation becoming effective today.
He gave them no other choice, really, in to choose him because of the record that he's got and the type of football they're playing. I think they are playing every phase. Jimmy, like you spoke about, what other coaches might go in and sell. Every phase, I'm talking the defensive phase, the ball movement phase, the attacking phase, they are doing it really, really well.
So we know Bob, Paul Rose won the whole thing after being a caretaker coach and obviously winning the full-time job. We've had Grant Thomas and Neil Craig making prelims. Brett Ratton at two different clubs after winning the job as a caretaker took his team to finals, as did Mark Harvey after his stint at the Dockers. But one thing we know for sure, no caretaker has had a stint quite like this in their role as the caretaker coach. 13 games, he's lost only two of them, and they were left with no other choice.
I feel like we've almost got a gap in language because of all the interim coaches and caretaker coaches, and then there's what Josh Fraser has done. That's how I am viewing this ascension to being the senior coach of Carlton. Of what he took over, of how long he's been in charge, and he just hasn't played a false note in 3 months, which some people go, oh, it's only 3 months. That's also a long time when you are dragging a footy club off the absolute bottom of the ocean floor. That's how low Carlton were at the time. And they are a different footy club, and that's down to Josh Fraser. So I agree with Matthew Lloyd. There was no other choice in the end. The other candidates didn't miss out on the job. It was just that Josh Fraser was just too overwhelmingly perfect for the footy club at this time.
So I think the Graham Wright connection's interesting, isn't it? Mm. That, obviously they'd worked together at Collingwood and then he comes across, clearly he'd identified him that he was a person of particular interest coming through, obviously, the coaching ranks. And he's obviously been highly credentialed in the way that he's been able to go through a process, find Craig McRae, obviously, at Collingwood.
Yep.
Sam Mitchell, obviously, worked with him at Hawthorn as well. And now Josh Fraser, seemingly his guy. I know there's been a lot of people out there saying, what happens next year if they start slow? Well, what if they started slow with any other guy? Mm. And then the constant storyline that dogged the new coach was, you could add Josh Fraser. We were winning when he was coaching and they went in a different direction. It sort of feels like whichever way it goes, whether it's up, down, stays the same.
Well, yes. Everyone's a hindsight hero, aren't they?
Yeah.
So if I go back to, prior to Josh being announced as the interim caretaker / Fraser taker coach... I remember being surprised at the time thinking, I thought Ash Hansen was the obvious choice. And so when it was Josh Fraser, I was like, that's interesting. But I didn't stay with that thought long enough, Corbin. And it's your job, Corbin, to drag these things out of me. And I thought these things and you didn't read my mind and drag it out. So this is kind of on you, mate.
There's all that brilliance there and it's my job to try and extract it. And I've left one on the table.
I'm just a big lump of clay. You're the one that has to turn it into something, like a marble sculpture. Come on.
Yes, like Michelangelo.
Exactly.
Every slab of stone, there's a sculpture waiting to be developed.
See, absolutely I knew you'd have something. Yep. That's beautiful.
Just on Essendon, by the way, so they're seemingly delaying things and all the detectives are out there, as I was last week, saying, it's been delayed for a week because they're going to appoint Mark McVay and they didn't want to do it when Sydney were about to play Essendon and now it's seemingly delayed again. Is this because they're worried about the herd reactors and that there's going to be too much of a pushback at their home game this week against Port Adelaide? What's the reason for it?
I can only offer that maybe they don't want to announce their coach in the same week that Carlton does. How's that for sophisticated, deep forensic analysis?
What if some of the candidates that missed out had Carlton maybe making a late push for the Essendon job?
Add that into the drama of the Essendon coaching search. That's not where my thoughts went, but it's certainly a possibility. And at Essendon, anything's a possibility.
Well, that's the thing. Oh, I haven't heard that, by the way. I'm just
it's a reasonable assertion. Possibility.
It's interestingly, the four guys that did present have still apparently they've all been communicated to that had no decision expected this week. So maybe they haven't made a decision. Maybe they're just still mulling it over. But it is unusual.
Do you believe that though?
The formal.
Wouldn't you think that they have? My gut is they have made the decision.
Yeah.
And that just they're keeping mum on that one so that doesn't give it away. Telling.
Yeah.
Coach XYZ that they're not in. It's like, okay, I can work that.
The longer it goes, is it fair to assume that it's probably not James?
Yes.
Because you would think if it was James, that this club's screaming out for, some kind of positive PR and a way for the club to be of interest and get everyone to rally around them. And the other thing is the other three guys that are seemingly in the mix, all their teams are playing finals.
Mm.
So is it out of sensitivity for them? Maybe if their teams are finishing in the top six, they'll get a week off before their final series begins. And so even if they are to stay and run the journey with their club, it gives them time to come and do the press conference, meet people and everything else.
Perhaps. Yeah. I suppose I'm probably more leaning to what is probably the populist view, that the likelihood is that it's Mark McVay and this extra time could be to convince James Hird to be a part of the coaching team, which is, I'm not putting anything new into the arena there, but that's sort of where I find my logic sitting.
Yep. No, I think that's the favoured way. I think you and I have been on McVay for a period of time. So
did feel like that's where the winds of change had gone to.
Yep. Yeah. All right. We'll watch this space. Josh Fraser will speak later today, so there'll be a press conference on that front. Zach Butters, he's another name which has dominated the headlines right throughout 2026, and it was no different last night when his name was sort of central to a broader conversation around the Western Bulldogs youth after Jack Riewoldt put it on the agenda that, hey, if we're looking at the guys under 22, Richmond has more optimism around them than any other team. Well, on AFL 360 last night on Fox Footy, Luke Beveridge just tried to correct a little bit of Jack's homework.
I mean, Jack was making a case for the future with anyone, whether it's Zach Butters or any potential player acquisition, that into the future that Richmond are better positioned with all their young talent. But you can see by our names there, the guys who are mostly currently in the team, and The boy from Balmain in Lachie Carmichael made his debut yesterday. So he did. He shortchanged us. He left four or five off just to make his Richmond point. But I think, you know, based on ladder position, you know, we're ninth. The teams who we put up, obviously the Tigers, you know, they're looking to develop and progress. But we've been able to hold it together and give ourselves a reasonable look in the history of the last sort of 10 to 12 years, played in 1-1-1, lost one against the Demons in 21. We feel like we've strategically positioned ourselves with Tassie coming in to re-emerge. It's a really important off-season for us. You know, if we can bring three or four players from other clubs who are pretty experienced just to bolster and fortify our stocks, then we'll be in a really good position. And so, yeah, he's probably making a case for us if he put the names on there, but he left them off just to conveniently make Richmond's case.
I found this fascinating.
So you give me what your impression of what you heard then, and then I'll add mine.
So immediately I thought, oh, look, this is interesting. Bevo's there correcting Jack's homework. And then I thought, hang on, he's not correcting Jack's homework. Mm-hmm. He's correcting it for Zach. He's showing Zach. Look, hey,
you and
Zach,
I, we've been hanging out too often, Corbin. That's exactly where I went. Using Jack as a vessel to speak directly to Zach and Zach's people.
I'm going to go one step further. Hold the phone. And then I thought, you know what? He's showing Zach, you know, look at all this, you know, young kids and the optimism. It's great. Let's just put the record right. And then the third thing I thought is he talking to the board? Like, he's about to coach next year on the last year of his deal. Is there a little bit where he's saying, hey, guys, look at this presentation. We're going to play finals. We've still got all these nice pieces, but also, hey, we're regenerating on the run too. So don't just think it's about the here and now and judge us on our wins and losses. Have a look at some of the trees we're planting for someone else to sit under one day.
Well, he's a highly intellectual, highly intelligent coach, Luke Beveridge. And, you know, these coaches, they work on multiple levels at the one time. So I don't think that would be a stretch to imagine. Just the little mention of Jack, little mention of Zach, bit of a synopsis of the last 10 years and the trophy cabinet and the achievements. So he was pretty efficient, really, when you think about it.
But also, I feel like the Butters acquisition feels so important to Luke Beveridge's tenure, doesn't it? Where you think, if you all of a sudden look at what the Dogs could be next year, if they've got Richards, who's probably a two-time All-Australian by then, they've got Bontempelli, who's still close enough to his time, they've got English on contract, it feels like, you know, who knows what's going to happen there. Sam Darcy comes back, and then you add Zach Butters into that mix, and hopefully they go and get a, you know, Jordan Butts type or someone that can hold up the defense a little bit. Now you imagine next year where English leaves, they don't get Butters, Bontempelli's another year older, and then all of a sudden you think, holy smokes, this thing is not where they thought it would be, and Luke Beveridge is off contract coaching for his job in 2027.
That's the seesaw of footy, isn't it? Which way the dominoes fall. So without Zach Butters, so let's say English stays, but without Zach Butters, but if everything else sort of falls their way in terms of injury and getting Sam Darcy back and a bit of a run out next year, I still think they're a top six team for next year. But if they get Butters, then it is go time. It is absolutely go time. But as you say, the other side of that coin is miss out on Butters, miss out on English. Sam's coming back from a knee. Bonte's getting on. Libba's, you know, how long has Libba got left? Still short in defence. So there's extremes either way. They're always an intrigue, my Dogs.
Yeah. Have they underachieved this year?
Have they underachieved? Maybe just marginally. Yep.
And obviously it's still all ahead of them. It'd be interesting to see where they finish. Do they rest Bont this week?
I would think he'll play, is my gut feel on that. Yeah.
Okay.
I would think.
Yep. He's had a week off, plays.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. I would think they would want to get him back in, tune him up.
Speaking of coaches, over in South Australia, Matthew Nix, his name came up last night. All of a sudden, Carlton and Essendon have obviously moved coaches on, about to appoint, you know, new full-time coaches. And so there's always a coach in the hot seat in the competition. And despite the fact that Matthew Nix is about to take his team to another finals campaign, his name came up on Footy Classified on Channel 9 last night.
Yeah, I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that his job is potentially in trouble if they go from top of the ladder last year, going out in straight sets, missing the top four this year, and losing their first final. I mean, you know, let's play it out. What happens if they finish seventh and lose a wildcard game at home to, say, Carlton?
I think he'd still be coaching.
I think, for me and the people I speak to, I think it becomes a question. I think him coaching...
So people around Adelaide have said to you, it'd be in doubt if he doesn't win a final.
I'm not going to say who's spoken to me, but I think that his job is potentially in jeopardy if they lose their first final. Like, I wouldn't absolutely be putting pen to paper saying that he'll be coaching Adelaide round one.
So win a final at the very least, in your eyes, for him to be coaching round one 2027.
Context is everything. But if they were to lose a wildcard game at home to a Victorian club, that's a big fall from grace from being the best team in the competition on the home and away season last year.
You'd want to have someone in mind, like a Simon Goodwin type, rather than a first-timer to replace.
It's an interesting name you bring up. Why do you go straight there?
Because he's an Adelaide Crows great, who's been a premiership coach.
Close with Mark Ricciuto.
Okay. So is that what you're getting at?
No, I'm not getting at anything. I'm not getting at anything at all. And I hope that Matthew Nix is coach of the Adelaide Crows for a long time yet. But the facts will remain, if they regress that hard and they don't win a final, it's a win-loss game. We know that. And the Adelaide Footy Club Damo has a reputation for being pretty ruthless in these
situations. It has been historically.
It didn't take long, Bob, to talk about Matthew Nix before all of a sudden we're talking about Simon Goodwin.
Yeah, gee, that's another one if you just sort of squint at it and you listen to it and then like one of those 3D eye puzzles where it just starts to emerge for you. Nothing that Sam McClure said that was jarring for me. Mm. And Lloydie seemed like he was a bit sort of surprised by it, whether he really was or not, I'm not so sure. But it's not a stretch for me. I'm not sure about you, Corbin, but if Adelaide did lose a wild card final first up and were just bundled straight out in a two-team town, I would imagine there would be a heap of pressure that goes on Matthew Nix.
I agree. And this is where, you know, all the advantages that they had last year and they weren't able to convert, that's all well and good and you get given the time, but you want to make sure you do it next year. If all of a sudden you slide outside the top six, remembering they were top of the tree, 18-win team last year, and you lose to 10th, then I can completely understand that conversation's pretty hot.
Is it a list that could win the flag, Adelaide? On paper, I mean.
Not for me. I feel like they didn't address any of their issues last year. Yeah. So they were a midfielder short and that they didn't go out and do anything about it. And I'm not sure the big three can all play together in the forward line, and yet the big three is still playing together in the forward line.
Well, that probably helps Nix then. Like basic sort of, you know, football thinking is, if you think your list is capable of tackling the very, very top of the mountain and you're not sure if you've got the coach, then the heat goes up.
It reminds me a little bit of sliding doors moments. Remember round 24 last year, the Bulldogs Fremantle game at Docklands?
Unfortunately, I do.
Yeah. Sounds ridiculous in retrospect. If that went the other way and Fremantle didn't make the finals for a couple of years in a row, wouldn't have shocked me one bit if all of a sudden Justin Lomuel was under a fair bit of pressure. Yeah, they make it, even though they lost the final against the Gold Coast that followed, and then they come out and they have one of the great regular seasons that we've witnessed this year.
Again, this is why you are the genius that you are. As we were discussing Adelaide, I started thinking about Fremantle, thinking, well, this would have been the pressure on them because all the talk is around, well, the list is ready to go, but is Justin Lomuel the man to take them there? Well, so far, it's looking like Justin Longmuir is the man to take them there. We'll see.
Mm. All right, last one before we get out of here, the wild card conversation. We've had a few things today that keep repeating. So Carlton and Essendon, which we always discuss.
Play
the hits, absolutely. And here it is, the wild card concept as we get towards round 24 and a whole round of dead rubbers.
I'm not sold on the wild card round, quite apart from the fact that round 24 is now shaping up as a bit of a dud and even allowing for Josh Fraser's scintillating journeys into the so-called finals. I've got a nasty feeling that once round 25 is complete, and I'm calling it round 25, we're going to have an even more compromised final series. In the good old days next week, we would have seen the Western Bulldogs genuinely contending for a spot in the finals, followed by a weekend of clean air for AFLW and potentially the best stage for a representative game between Australia and Ireland. No, Hutchie, I'm with my colleague Jake Nile. wildcard round for me is looming as a sugar hit of a weekend and a moneymaker for the AFL. And I'll go as far as to say incredibly unfair on the teams that finish seventh and eighth.
You'd have to be joking.
No.
It's been the most compelling six love defeat of the wildcard cynics of all time. You've had Carlton and Collingwood keep their seasons alive and dream when there was no dream to be had for the prospect of making 10th, and have created amazing marquee games over the next and last month. And you've got a magic carpet ride in Carlton that we would never have seen or contemplated. Kane wanted Collingwood season over and mounted a reasonable point at the time.
Josh Fraser would have got the job anyway, whether or not he'd got Carlton into the wildcard round. If Collingwood were good enough and their ride's been amazing, they could have made the eight had things been different, and they would have been trying all manner of different things other than being happy with a draw the
other
night.
We're in the entertainment business, and you'd rather next weekend to be sitting home with no footy on. That's what you'd rather.
Ben and I have debated this all year, Bob. In fact, for multiple years. And Ben is anti-wildcard. I've been pro-wildcard. Have we got a definitive conclusion? Is the debate over on the wildcard?
Can I offer you this, and you let me know if I can get away with it? Because I've been in the camp of, no, it's a money-making sugar hit, as Caro put it there. And realistically, no one in the wildcard can actually make a run at the flag. And it's just a bit of, you know, Americanization of our game. Having said that, the 2026 season is undoubtedly the perfect season for the wild card, because I feel like whatever four teams we end up in there, because the three is set, Carlton, Western Bulldogs, Collingwood, and then we'll see who the other one is, they are going to be four genuine wild card teams. So I feel like in this season alone, it has been an absolute win. But I want to see a bigger sample size, because one of my fears, and I imagine a fear for other people as well, was what happens if we have a team or two teams just like fall into this 10th and 9th that just have no business playing anything like finals football? But we won't get that this year. So I've got to admit, as the season's gone, I have warmed to it, but I am wanting to see a bit more of a sample size over the next 4 years, call it.
The intelligent voice of reason in Bob Murphy, who's on my side of the debate, which I love, that he's pro-wildcard for now slightly. And when that pendulum swings, I'm going to take it. I'll run to Ben. I'll say, ha-ha, Bob Murphy is on our side. When
Benny and I, we have our relationship is set that we take opposing sides. It's just the way we're built.
Yes.
It's just how things are.
That's why you and I get along so well.
Exactly. You and I just kick with the Corbin breeze.
I made this point last night too on AFL Monday, and just to back up what you were saying, and I tried to explain it as impartially and without emotion as I possibly could, and yet there were still fans clapping back at me on the talkback line and the SMS. St Kilda would have been a wildcard nightmare for the AFL for every single reason that you mentioned. So there's 0-10 against top 9 teams. You do not want a team in 10th place that is incapable of causing chaos and upsets. Whereas Carlton, who are flaming hot at the moment, great opportunity, you know, to get in there and have a little bit of volatility. That's the whole idea of those spots. And yet there were still St Kilda fans, as you can imagine, Bob, going rah, 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 unhappy about
it. It's a blessing for the Saints that they're not in it. It's a blessing.
Yep.
I have a feeling they would have been absolutely walloped and put themselves in a more negative position to go into next year. Keep them hungry
no
for
Naz.
2027.
Yep. No, that they had no business being part of that.
No.
So I think that's a good thing for neutral footy fans that they're not part of it. And as you said, maybe a blessing for the Saints that they're not there either. Bob, appreciate you hanging with me. I'm on the other side of the country, so with a few little technical gremlins, but you're very patient after getting up at 1:30 to do a breakfast show, and yet you're still here.
One team, one dream.
That's it. Appreciate your company as always. The home of your footy conversation right here on ABC AFL Daily.